Lunchtime at a typical Welsh school. Most pupils are heading here to the canteen, or perhaps to the playground. But some have chosen quieter pursuits. They're spending time being mindful.
Feel the lifting of your chest as you breathe in, and the lowering as you breathe out.
Based on Buddhist meditation techniques, mindfulness is a way of being present in the moment.
And then become aware of your whole body.
And forgetting about the difficulties of daily life.
And your breath like a wave going through your whole body as you breathe in and out.
I use it loads for like concentration and revising and trying to write a practice question suddenly. Everything else that isn't revising seems amplified and more exciting. So like I'd sit down, concentrate on the feet on the floor and in the present moment and concentrating. And then suddenly I can just, I'm not worried anymore. So I can actually concentrate on writing.
It's been around for a long time, but mindfulness has grown in popularity in recent years, and politicians are now keen to explore whether it can be used to help improve outcomes in different policy areas.
The more I read about it, the more I thought this is pertinent, not just on a personal level, but also on a policy level. In the health service, in the emergency services, the prison services, education, you know, its benefits can reach every area of public policy.
I'm Felicity Evans. And this week, Eye on Wales explores whether the ancient practice of mindfulness can be part of the solution to the stresses and strains of modern living.
My name's Nicola Wheaton, I'm 31 and I'm from Cardiff, and I took part in my first ever mindfulness course in 2012. There was a lot of stresses going on for me at that particular point in time. I think I was putting a lot of pressure on myself and trying to find the time to fit everything in, to be the best I could possibly be while studying, whilst working full time, and there was other personal stuff going on as well.
Nicola is one of thousands of people across the UK who learned to practice mindfulness when she was going through a difficult period in her life.
It was a build-up, and you don't notice it at first. You don't notice you're feeling that little bit stressed. The stress you do feel, you think, oh, well, it's an everyday thing, you know, millions of other people go to work, go to uni, you know, keep in contact with their friends, make sure their marriage is perfect. And then over time, it built up, and I felt myself began to feel very anxious. And then it got to the point where I really felt that my world just went off kilter slightly. The pressures that I was involved increased my anxiety, decreased my confidence and my self-esteem. And then I had a load of worry built up. Why am I reacting like this? You know, and you're going round in circles. The best way for me to describe it was that I was in like a hall of mirrors. And I was running every which way in every direction to try and get answers, to try and feel normal, as they say.
Nicola was taught by a Buddhist writer and mindfulness trainer, Vishvapani. I met him in a Cardiff park to learn more.
If we just sit up a little straighter than we have been and feel our feet on the floor, and then just closing our eyes, that gives us the capacity to turn inwards. So having a conversation, we're usually focus on what's out there, but inside is important as well. And then if the breath flows in and flows out, and we notice that happening, we just give our attention to the sensations of breathing. We're not thinking about the breath, we're just noticing, enjoying whatever it feels like. And particularly as we breathe out, noticing the sense of letting go of tension and holding. And maybe feeling that tension draining away into our feet. And then enjoying the sense of stopping, of being still, and a little bit of peace. And then we can just open our eyes again and look around us, see what we see. One way of putting it is it's the opposite of the experience we have when we're thinking about a million things and rushing to get onto the next one and maybe worried about what happened a moment ago. In all those cases, we're living in the past or the future and we're preoccupied with a sense of rushing and compulsion. So mindfulness is really about being present, paying attention, and learning that we have the capacity to do that, to make the shift from one state to another state.
Is there a religious basis to the idea of mindfulness?
The roots of mindfulness do lie within Buddhism, and my own view is that really we have to go back to the Buddha, who was rather unlike most of the other religious teachers around at the time, someone who thought the way to understand this life that we have is to look at the mind. And he noticed certain patterns in the mind. He noticed the power that we have to direct the mind and to develop our minds. So I think that is a very important element in the mix with the background to mindfulness. But of course, it's been made secular. These capacities and these skills have been taken out of the Buddhist tradition, tested scientifically, and integrated into a course, which means that people don't have to have any sense of connection with Buddhism or anything like that.
It is mindfulness in that secular context that has caught the attention of academics and politicians in Britain and the United States. The Centre for Mindfulness Research and Practice at Bangor University is one of the leading research centres looking at its application and effectiveness, both for individuals and wider society. Its director is Rebecca Crane.
Here at Bangor University, we've been researching mindfulness particularly as a way to support people who are vulnerable to repeated depressions. So we know from research that people who've experienced depression in their lives are more vulnerable to future episodes of depression. And this is because we learn patterns of responding to thoughts and emotions and sensations in our body during episodes of depression, and these can easily be re-triggered. For these people, mindfulness is a way of enabling them to come to see these patterns and be able to make clearer choices, to be able to see that their mind is going down a route that actually is unhelpful, and to be able to pull it back and take things in a different direction.
And in terms of the research that you've done into how effective that can be, what does your research tell you?
So repeated trials now indicate that mindfulness in the form of an 8-week course that we call mindfulness-based cognitive therapy reduces the risk of relapse in depression by between 40 and 50%. And that's a dramatic result because the risk of relapse can be up to 90 for this group of people.
That does sound dramatic. Of course, there are grades of depression, aren't there, from mild to severe. Does mindfulness help with all levels of depression, or is it better with the mild end of the spectrum?
The research has particularly been on people who have experienced repeated episodes of depression. So these are people who, when they take the program, they're actually not in an episode of depression, but they're highly vulnerable to future episodes. The depressions that they've had are often very severe, including people who've been suicidal during depressions. But it's a way for them to support themselves to prevent future relapse.
Depression and anxiety are conditions that more and more of us are having to cope with. Prescription levels for antidepressants have risen steeply in recent years, and many NHS mental health services are creaking under the strain of increased referrals from GPs. Mindfulness was officially recognised as a treatment for depression in 2004, but it hasn't been widely adopted within the NHS. A pioneering project in Cwm Taf University Health Board, which covers the Rhondda, Canon and Merthyr Valleys, is hoping to change that. Sue Breton is a consultant clinical psychologist for the Health Board. She's designed a mindfulness course that she hopes will take some pressure off the system.
When you've got a physical illness, you'll go to the GP, and we've all had it drummed into us. You've got to go and see about it sooner rather than later, or it could kill you. So we get something physically wrong, we go to the doctor, and we expect the doctor to do something, to refer us to someone who can sort it for us, or to give us something or do something to make it better. When we have a psychological problem, we also go to the GP. And because we do that, we tend to think that the same rules apply. Firstly, that if we don't do something about it, it'll really get us and we'll probably go mad or something. And secondly, that somebody else is going to cure it for us. And neither of those things are true. Firstly, with most of these at the milder end of the mental health spectrum, if you actually stop worrying about it, it will get better. It's the worrying about it that makes it worse. But secondly, because all these issues, mood problems, are caused by our thinking habits, nobody else can actually cure it for us. But we were spending a lot of time explaining that to the average patient. So we thought we need to educate the population as a whole. If they understood how to address these milder issues themselves, Give it 20 years or so and people will not be going to the GP expecting antidepressants or tranquilizers for fairly mild everyday issues that if they understood how to go about it, they could sort out for themselves. So we introduce what we call Tier Zero. We've got two courses. One is a classical CBT course called Stress Control, and the other is the Mindfulness course. Both of them are 6 weeks long, 1 week, one session a week.
And anyone can go. They don't need to have been referred by a GP.
They're open access. Anybody can come. We don't take names. We don't keep records of names of people who attend. People can take their mates because we want to educate the general public in simple ways that they can actually enjoy their lives more by not stressing. And it is starting to snowball. We're getting sort of numbers of 40 for mindfulness courses in Merthyr. We had 80 in Llantrisant. So word is spreading. So hopefully there will come a time when the GPs will start referring some of their milder cases, straight suggesting they go to Tier Zero rather than referring them to the primary care mental health teams, which will let us focus more on the people who really need a little bit more intervention.
I was going to ask you to what extent mindfulness only addresses symptoms rather than root causes, but from what you're saying, that's completely the wrong approach to take to mindfulness, yeah. That in addressing the symptoms, you're also helping, yeah, to address the causes.
Yes, because it is our thinking habits that gets into trouble. A lot of the people we see have been prescribed things that they're not even taking. If it's your thoughts that's causing your problems, medication is never going to cure it. Medication is useful for the more severe cases who need to have some sort of help to get their minds in a place where they're receptive to the other approaches. But medication alone can never totally cure anxiety or depression.
Nec John is a mother of two from Rhondda-Cynon on Taf and has been on a Tier Zero course. She's been living with bipolar disorder and anxiety for the past 25 years and now uses mindfulness alongside her medication.
I think what mindfulness did and why it so drastically had an impact on me was that it taught me to look at the facts of what were happening. And that in turn stopped me having these head conversations with myself, because I may sit there, for example, have I upset someone? Oh, I must have upset them. I've done this, I've upset them. And then I'd sort of sit back and think, actually, no, I haven't done anything to upset them. So why am I even worrying about that? It also taught me to accept bad feelings that I have about myself, even physical feelings. And that comes in really handy when, you know, on the onset of having an anxiety attack. So if I start getting the sweaty hands or the pumping chest, to accept them. And actually, the more I accept them, the quicker they go. There's a lack of awareness about mental health. Mental health is not mental illness. We all have to look after our mental health like we do our physical health, like you go to the gym to keep fit. And sometimes the stresses of everyday life play on you. And mindfulness is about learning to, or helping you to manage your mental health.
Since attending the course last year, Nick has noticed a reduction in the number of anxiety attacks she has. Mindfulness has provided a similar benefit in Nicola Wheaton's life.
The very, very first session, I'll always remember, even though I didn't understand it completely, there was an understanding there I felt that I could relate to and recognise, and I instantly felt comfortable. What that allowed me to do then is during that course and the following weeks, and to be honest, it's still up until this day, it's learning how to almost stop, you know, stop trying to chase feelings of feeling well and being met with the feelings that are existing and not knowing what to do with them. It made me stop and reflect. So like I said about the Hall of Mirrors, I was able to stop, look at myself, look at my emotions, let myself feel those emotions, let them be and own them and gain some ownership around them. And that was such a relief.
Stories like these, backed by academic research, have inspired a group of MPs and peers to examine how mindfulness could be used more widely and effectively in different areas of public policy. Last month, they set up an all-party parliamentary group into mindfulness to hear the latest evidence on the subject. It's co-chaired by the Labour MP for the Vale of Clwyd, Chris Rowan.
Our aim is to spot where there is best practice around the UK, around the world, where there is best research, which perhaps hasn't even been put into practice yet. So our first inquiry is into the use of mindfulness in business, how it can help business become more efficient, more creative, fewer days lost through absences. One of the key issues is how, because there's such huge interest in mindfulness and there are so few mindfulness trainers, so one of the key issues is how do we preserve the integrity of mindfulness? How do we extend the quantity without reducing the quality of mindfulness? So that's one of the key issues that we'll be addressing.
And the business is just the first thing that you're looking at, is it? You will be looking at all sorts of other areas.
We'll be looking at mindfulness in health, which is also already established but not expanded enough. In 1991, there were 9 million antidepressant prescriptions issued. By 2011, that had gone up to 48 million. There was a 500% increase in the issuing, in the prescribing of antidepressants. Now, mindfulness, the science is proven. It puts the individual in control. There are no known side effects, and it's cheaper in the long run.
Schools are another area where interest in mindfulness is growing. Asgol Dewi Sant at St David's in Pembrokeshire offers its GCSE students a voluntary 8-week .B course run by a trained practitioner. I went along to a session to find out more.
Today we're going to look at another mindfulness practice, which is called .B. Which, of course, is the name of the course that we've been teaching some of you, you know, through the year.
I'm Elizabeth Daniels, and I'm the present .B teacher in the school.
.B stands for stopping, waking up to any kind of reactiveness that you're in, and shifting into a more intelligent or effective state. Waking
well,
up
dot B,
what
I think,
really
is it's almost genius because dot B is text speak for stop and breathe and be, and it kind of encapsulates the course, which is teaching children how to change their mental gear, really, from their thinking doing mode, which can get them very stressed, especially at exam times or when they're under pressure, and enabling them to change that into a being mode which enables them to respond and choose more freely how they're going to respond in the moment.
What I'm going to do is kind of describe a scenario to you, a typical scenario going to an exam, all right? And I'm going to interweave some of the practices that we've done. I'll talk you through.
The idea is that some of the children will really take it up and do it regularly, you know, and be very enthusiastic. A greater number of the children will do it from time to time. And some of the children, you know, won't do it at all. But if at any time when they're older they run into any difficulties in their lives, they'll know there was something that they could use and they'll be already, you know, kind of open, because the idea behind the Dot B course is for it to be engaging, fun and relevant, and it really is all those three things.
I use it loads for like concentration and revising, trying to write a practice question suddenly. Everything else that isn't revising seems amplified and more exciting. So like I'd sit down, concentrate on the feet on the floor and in the present moment and concentrating, and then suddenly I can just, I'm not worried anymore, so I can actually concentrate on writing.
Towards the end of the paper, there was this one question, I can't remember what it was about, but it was just, like, I hadn't revised that question, and it just freaked me out, and, like, I'm not very good in exams anyway, so I just heartbeat and fast and all. It does calm you down.
I've used mindfulness quite often, and whenever I get, like, sad thoughts, I think of my mind as a bus stop. It's called the bus stop method, when you see your thoughts as buses go across your mind. I find, especially at night time, when your mind's wondering about, like, the past and what you have to do tomorrow and what you haven't done, your thoughts are just going ruminating around your mind. I find that it can really control your thoughts and help you sleep better.
I'd be really worried about going to school in the morning, and then I come to school and just randomly freak out. But since I've been coming here, like, I don't get that at all.
Because I do a lot of gymnastics and circus, and it really helps because it stops you from, like, thinking about everything that you're doing, and you just sort of, like, comes to you as you do the move. It's, like, just be nice because you don't think about it, you just know it.
I get quite like bad back pains a lot and like neck cramps, and when I first started kind of I focus on the pain, but then when I carry on and start breathing more, it just goes and it's really relaxing.
David Haynes is head teacher at Asgol Dewi Sant.
We were very keen to look at the impact on this and how it would have an impact on our students' outcomes, and there was a a trial group to start off with, a little small group, and the impact was outstanding in terms of stress relief, concentration for lessons, and also, you know, the wider world of working, things like performing on stage, sports activities, just to be in the moment, to be focused about what's happening here and now, and not to let the mind drift too far off what's happening really in the moment.
There's been a noticeable difference, has there, with the pupils who've been engaging with the mindfulness in terms of performance and how they engage right across the spectrum here at the school. Is that what you're saying?
Significant difference, I think. Our outcomes this year, this summer, with our Year 11 children are looking significantly better than last year. Mindfulness will have a part to play in that, along with a number of areas, but this has certainly complemented what we're trying to do in school and has had an impact on the children. And the children will say that themselves. The student voice is very important in the school, and we like to find out what the children like. And the children will vote with their feet as well. And they have been very, very positive in all our conversations with them regarding this. They've spoken to secondary heads in the authority. They've spoken to visitors that come to school about their positive experience. And they've also attended during their lunch times to top up on the course that they did.
One of the visitors to the school who's been impressed by the .B course is the actor Jerome Flynn. After hitting the big time in the 90s with the television series Soldier Soldier and topping the charts for 7 weeks with a cover version of Unchained Melody, he developed an interest in mindfulness. He now lives in Pembrokeshire and remains a committed mindfulness practitioner. He spoke to me from Dublin, where he's currently filming the television series Game of Thrones.
There was a time a few years ago now, the first kind of phase of my career, when for one reason or another I kind of reached quite a level of celebrity and success, but it was quite overwhelming. And that's when I really turned to meditation and mindfulness. And it changed my life, changed my whole relationship to my experience, and has helped me beyond words. That's why I'm so keen to do what I can to influence the authorities and the schools to bring it in, to share that. Because I remember leaving school as a young person. You know, I'd been to quite a good school, but I had this sense of walking into the world but feeling underprepared in terms of, yeah, how to navigate the very tricky business of being alive in what is in quite an intense time to be alive. And the kids nowadays, 25 years on, I think, are under a lot more stress and pressure and walking into an even more scary world. So for me, it's something that, if I was in the place of authority that could have some influence over what happened in our schools, I would make it number one, I have to say.
Could I ask you about the school near where you live in Pembrokeshire, it's called Dewi Sant. You've been there a few times to learn more about the mindfulness course for students and to encourage them, haven't you, in terms of,
yes,
of the practice of it. What did you make of what they're doing there, and how did you find it?
I came away from my first meeting there so thrilled. I thought I was going to be, you know, trying to encourage them about mindfulness. And they sat in front of me and were able to talk about their experience and in such a way that it completely blew me away. Their enthusiasm at what they were discovering and the freedom they were discovering in just, you know, realizing that they didn't have to be caught in their minds and they could actually have some independence and autonomy and be able to slow it down, create some space. And the effect that was having on their work, their creativity, their sports, it completely blew me away. And they were just so positive. And I walked away from there so much more hopeful and less cynical than I did when I walked in. You forget the kind of potential that youthful energy has, and creativity. And no matter how much we may get swamped by all of our technology and social media, which is kind of a thought that I've had, it's like how do children cope, but actually that's what mindfulness is so good at. It's really kind of feeds that creative, independent thinking and actions, and that's what I saw from these kids.
The All-Party Parliamentary Group will complete its inquiry into mindfulness next year. And as interest in it grows, it's likely that a course might soon be on offer in a doctor's surgery or school or office near you. But what of the sceptics, those who regard mindfulness as simply the latest craze, too alternative and airy-fairy to make a meaningful difference on a large scale? Rebecca Crane of Bangor University's Centre for Mindfulness Research and Practice.
I think the evidence does speak for itself, and I'm not here trying to sell mindfulness. I've experienced the benefits of mindfulness in my own life, and as I share the approach with people in a range of different contexts, I see the difference that it makes. It's really very extraordinary how in the short space of 8 sessions with the practice in between that people do during a mindfulness training course, how many, many people really do take a very new and fresh look at their lives and make very radical changes to how they're approaching themselves and their lives.
Does it work for everybody?
I think there's inevitably going to be people who don't want to engage in mindfulness, and I think that's really fine. Our experience is that whenever people come to a mindfulness course and engage in the practices, because this doesn't happen accidentally, there's a lot of work. It's almost the hardest work in the world to be really present and kindly with ourselves and our lives. So this takes a lot of energy and commitment to engage in. And our experience is that there's always something positive that comes out of that for people who apply themselves to that form of training.
Obviously, it remains to be seen how much of a difference the widespread use of mindfulness teaching could really make to some of the big challenges facing us in schools, the health service, or in working life. But for Nicola Wheaton and others like her, it's the difference it makes to her daily life that counts.
As a working mum, I've had to develop a way for me to be able to make time for myself, to make sure I'm balanced and keeping myself healthy and able to look after my son and my family. So it will mean I'll do 10 minutes in the morning, and then I've got an understanding with my husband then. We have come up with a routine at home, and I'll do half hour in the evening, and then that prepares me then for anything that is going on that evening or anything that's happened in that day. I mean, my job can be quite demanding, fantastic, but as every, you know, working man will tell you, working in general is quite demanding when you're looking after little ones. So I know if I've had a particularly tough day, I have got that 30 minutes of an evening where I can just sit, let it be okay with that, and then carry on. This has been the biggest investment in my life. This has been the biggest investment I've ever made.